This is the sound of football.
And on this week's Sound of Football, we'll be discussing the breaking news that Eduardo's ban for diving has been overturned by UEFA. Plus, there's a look into the psychological chicanery behind Adebayor's behaviour at the weekend, as well as a look ahead to all the big games taking place in Europe this week, plus the Socrates Football Bloggers Meetup and a whole lot more, all on this week's Sound of Football. And welcome to episode 6 of The Sound of Football. It's me, Chris Oakley, here once again with my two valiant cohorts, Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley. Welcome, chaps.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, much to cover, so let's plough straight on. This last week of football has been particularly eventful if you're English, because of the fact that England have qualified for the World Cup finals in 2010.
Hurrah.
So I think we should allow ourselves a moment of indulgence, shall we say, just to talk about that. Good news all round. Looks like and still one or two sort of minor concerns about defence and so on, but I think generally speaking it's fair to say that England's performance was pretty professional, and I think the main thing that people are starting to think about now is can England actually win the World Cup when we get there next year? But before that, what did we think of the actual performance? Who were the best? Who put forward the best performances individually, do you think? Let's start off with Terry.
Well, I was watching the game from Socrates, which was our a London bloggers meetup, and so I didn't catch a good part of it because I was drinking a lot of alcohol and going hurrah for England. But standout performances for me were Emil Heskey, as I'm a big sort of fan of him in that area, and I thought that Gerrard and Lampard were very effective. It was great to finally see those two really, really working well as a partnership, and of course, you know, Rooney, who just seems to be the focal point, you know, of that attack. A really, really, really good performance. But you know, the man for me is Capello. He's the outstanding man on that team. The manager. I mean, the way he's just stitched it all together is just fantastic.
Because I guess that in under previous regimes, there was always that doubt, even with Sven, who started off pretty well, that, you know, have they got enough flexibility and variety in their locker, tactically speaking, to be able to cope with all different situations in a game? And Capello, unless it's an incredible coincidence that he's just ended up having very easy games to play, seems to be able to kind of deal with anything that's thrown with him. I mean, a statistic that I read the other day is that England have not been behind in any of their 8 qualifiers to date, which suggests that he's doing something very much right. Would you agree with that, Graham?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's very, very early to start talking about winning World Cups and everything, because
indeed.
Because once you actually get there, it all becomes much of it's all a bit of a lottery anyway, once you get to the knockout stages. So, and the simplest answer to the question, can England win the World Cup, is obviously yes, because basically, well, if Greece can win the European Championships, then England can win the World Cup. I think they've got as good a chance as they've had in my memory to win it this time round. But
as mentioned before, I guess you've got the likes of Spain and Brazil yet to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's certainly an England team that should get to a quarter final berth. And once you get there, and really it is anybody's, and I think that's shown up in recent tournaments. Anyone who gets that far really has got there on merit, and you know you can go all the way from there.
For me, it's the two outstanding teams in the world. We've said this before: are Spain and Brazil, below that, I think there's a mini clutch of teams that are also capable of certainly, you know, getting into that final four, and I would class England among that, let's say, along with Holland and I would say Italy and France, but I mean, in fairness, neither of those two teams have been entirely convincing. So I think that the final four in the World Cup is a genuinely realistic goal, you know, penalty shootouts and other psychological concerns notwithstanding.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a decent side, but Yes, I mean, we'll see. I suppose you'll see how Capello and how the team deal with the tournament format and the structure and the culture and all that. There's a heck of a lot of questions to be asked and answered before we go there. But it's fun to indulge for the time being, because you know, as Englishmen, we're flushed with success, and it's an unfamiliar feeling. And I guess we should just sort of enjoy it for while it lasts.
I guess a more appropriate question, if you want to sort of carry on this indulgent feeling that we've got here, is whether England can actually finish the qualifying campaign with 10 wins out of 10, because as I used on one of my Friday lists recently, in fact I think it was last Friday's Friday list on the Some People on the Pitch website, not really that many teams in the history have actually qualified by winning all of their games, at least not in the modern era.
No, not when you have to play 10 games, yeah.
Well, exactly. I think it's only... I think, obviously, Holland have just done it, having won eight.
Eight, yeah, they're in a small group, aren't they, yeah.
I'm not sure who England have got in the last. Is it Belarus, I think, we've got in the next game?
Away to Ukraine and home to Belarus, I think it is.
Okay. What about that, then? I think on current form, they look certainly capable of finishing off with a... Yes, 10 wins out of 10.
Certainly, I certainly think Capello will make all the right noises in saying that yes, we want to go for 100%. But you know, he might use the opportunity to experiment a bit with the team. I mean, it's a perfect opportunity to, especially against Ukraine, where you're going into a competitive match, and being allowed to experiment in a competitive match it must be like gold for him, really.
Indeed, and needless to say, there are sort of one or two issues still to be ironed out. So I suppose no time like the present to begin where that's concerned, I guess.
Yeah,
quite.
I read in the Guardian at the weekend that it said in the England Croatia match, Lampard and Gareth Barry have the air of strangers who happen to have stepped into a lift together. Didn't really show on the night, if I'm honest. But the other. Incredible thing was that England got a penalty and there wasn't a hint of a dive involved in the case of Aaron Lennon's sort of run that led to the first goal.
No, an ill-timed lunge, it gave away a penalty. You know, that's the way it should be working, really.
Indeed.
Which brings us up nicely.
Nicely brought around to the next topic of conversation, which is...
Go on, you've set it up, you might as well finish it off.
UEFA overturning Eduardo's ban. So, Chris, what do you think of this? You've only just heard this. What's your immediate reaction?
Well, I think, really in terms of what the popular opinion is, I think most people will be relatively satisfied with that, won't they? Because in the sense of, as a lot of people were saying before, if you have a go at Arsenal for diving, then that just opens the floodgates, presumably, and then just you get into a ridiculous situation where some people are kind of having to campaign to UEFA to get bans overturned and blah 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 blah, and some people are saying that bans should have been enforced when a particular dive happens. So this just kind of just nullifies all of that, and we get back to normal. So in a sense, I'm kind of relieved in a way that someone's shown a bit of common sense. Does that tally up with your opinion, guys?
Certainly my opinion. What about yours, Terry?
Yeah, I don't think that it was entirely conclusive as to whether or not Eduardo was deliberately deceiving the referee. And so under those circumstances, I don't see how you can possibly make a ruling. I mean, the only way that you're going to know whether Eduardo cheated is if you look into his heart and find out. I mean, it's an impossible, it's an entirely subjective proposition.
It's interesting to say that, because I was going to mention this when it was brought up on a previous podcast, probably last week's. Playing devil's advocate, and I know I'm being deliberately naive, but surely when the actual thing happened, I mean, there was all this talk of Arsene Wenger sort of saying, well, you know, Eduardo's had this really bad injury, and frankly, he's more than likely to have wanted to get out of the way of that tackle by the goalkeeper,
absolutely.
And so on. Surely, I mean, this is for me very naive, but if you'd have asked Eduardo on the night, did you dive, it would have been interesting to hear what he would have said, albeit it would have been in Portuguese or whatever, but or Croatian or whatever, I'm not sure, you know. But, I know you don't sort of do that, but it's interesting that Eduardo didn't at any stage sort of come out and sort of say, actually, you know, I didn't dive, or he didn't, at least he didn't say so to the referee. And that's just taking a ridiculously idealistic approach, I know. But
Joe, if I just can add before Graham does chime in, but I would agree with that. It was a bit of a shame that perhaps he didn't defend himself publicly, but he may well have felt that it was wiser to do that. But I think it is worth bearing in mind that one, there wasn't. It's not entirely conclusive that he didn't get a touch. Keeper, one, and the other thing is that if you've just recently had your ankle removed or half removed from its socket, I think you're entitled to a bit of leeway when it comes to things like this. And if he's copped the willies, he's seen the goalkeeper coming, he's copped the willies, and he's gone down in anticipation of a foul, and it's not looked, and it's not happened, the foul, then the worst that really should happen is he should look a bit silly. He could conceivably get up and say, look, hang on, you know, that wasn't a penalty, you know, I just freaked out for a moment, don't give a penalty. But that doesn't actually work in real life, because Robbie Fowler did that once before and the referee ignored him. So, you know, I think in a professional environment, in a Champions League game, you know, there's not much more he could have done, I mean, in reaction to that. And as I said, without looking into his heart, you'll never really know how he cheated. And I think that it was... I would like to know whether or not Gordon Smith from the SFA is going to be charged for wasting UEFA's time. He was the guy who brought this all up. And for me, and I've said this before on this podcast, and I will say it again, this is high politics from the SFA, who are humpy about their national team not being good enough, and they're going down the rankings, and the likelihood that the SPL is going to lose a Champions League slot. And I think that they're trading on a man's reputation in order to try and, you know, and either influence the situation or try and make some kind of contribution to the game, because they're certainly not doing it on the football pitch. But that is my opinion, I should say.
Well, actually, following on from, I mean, you're saying about there didn't appear to be any contact. It was interesting reading Arsenal's reaction to it in their statement. They said, we were able to show that there was contact between the keeper and Eduardo, and the decision should be annulled. I didn't think that it was crystal clear that there was contact there.
I think they had an angle that we didn't. I think the thing is, what has to be proved is that there was no contact, and there is no angle that the many Sky were showing. There is no angle that conclusively proves that there was no contact between Boric and Eduardo.
And the referee didn't change his mind afterwards, and neither did any of the referee's assistants. So the UEFA panel looked at it and went, well, we can't uphold this. We can't keep this up on that basis. If the referee has said that it was a penalty, and everybody else has said it's a penalty, then it's a penalty. Now, you know, again, I mean, if Eduardo's a cheat, I mean, someone should ask him if he's a cheat.
Yeah. I mean, the sad thing is that his reputation is shot anyway now, because, you know, now he will permanently be known as a diver. And of course, he's not going to be very popular at any ground in the Premiership this season. But that's by the by. I think it's just, I think it's the right thing that it was overturned. It was an unsound ban to begin with, and quite rightly, and quite, you know, surprisingly, almost, it's been overturned.
I appreciate that we've got a time limit on things, but just very briefly, I mean, what do we think about this Northern European conception of sportsmanship that we call diving? I mean, in other parts of the world, it's the idea of hoodwinking the referee into getting a decision is sort of like, you know, part of the game. I mean, should people have the right to impose their own sense of sportsmanship on things? I mean, what's wrong with diving?
Sorry, Chris, go on.
No, go on.
Well, I think it's not just diving. I think you've got, there is, we've got elements in the game of so-called sportsmanship. They are open so much to abuse, like the whole kicking the ball out of play when someone is injured, and a lot of the time people aren't injured, they're just rolling around on the pitch because they've cocked up somewhere and the ball's now rushing towards their own goal. So, you know, they like to think, actually, you know, if I go down now, there may be someone will kick the ball out for me so I can get some treatment.
Or rather, then let's ask another question. How does Eduardo's dive stack up to scoring a goal and then running 90 yards down a pitch and celebrating in front of your old fans and inciting them to riot and then actually somebody getting injured?
Well, then we open up the next topic of conversation of Emmanuel Adebayor.
He's read the script, hasn't he?
He certainly has, hasn't he? It's utterly, utterly seamless, isn't it? I'd like to say one thing actually before we get into the nuts and bolts. How do you think? I'll ask this to Chris first. How do you think this whole thing would have been reported if Adebayor hadn't stamped? If the stamping hadn't happened in the game, how do you think it would have been reported from him doing the run and the reaction of the Arsenal crowd? Do you think the press has come down more on Adebayor because of the stamping incident? And so like, basically there was like a whole like caseload of stuff against him. Or do you think they've been reporting it
measuredly? I think certainly in the case of the stamping incident, that's one of those situations where you get this whole spin-off debate about, oh, well, you know, if it wasn't for the way that we now have camera angles and cameras all around the pitch to be able to pick these things up, and the fact that we rely so much on instantaneous replays on TV, that would not have entered into the equation, and it probably would have gone unseen by a lot of people. That's a sort of side issue. I think, and this kind of goes back to the previous thing we were talking about with Eduardo and diving and such like, that England particularly, or rather the British nations, having developed the game in the first place, have set off on this road of being, you know, we will carry forth the moral, we'll take the moral high ground, and we'll maintain the professional ideals of the game, whereas, as Terry was saying, you know, in other parts of Europe and, dare I say, South America or whatever, they've kind of now accepted diving as being a part of the... Yeah, bless you.
Sorry.
But what I was going to say on that point...
I'll leave that in,
actually. What I was going to say on that point, actually, is that maybe the rule makers need to sit around the table and sort of say, OK, well, you know, how do we kind of decide on issues like kicking the ball out of play and stuff like that? That because the two factions, if you like, in world football now going off on such wide tangents. But bring it back to the whole Adebayor thing, I think that sense of British sense of, you know, the British sensibilities means that everyone was outraged by the fact that he should go and run the full length of the pitch to celebrate in front of the crowd. And I think the whole thing with the stamping incident was just the cherry on the cake. That was absolutely the green light of, like, yes, we can really kind of steam into this fella now. We can really tear him to pieces as far as his reputation is concerned.
Yeah, I think there are some. It's possible that there are some people in the media who have got it in for Adebayor, because he has, the way he carried on, certainly in the summer of 2008, when he was blatantly counter-briefing against journalists, saying to one group of journalists that he wanted to stay at Arsenal forever, and then within minutes saying to another group of journalists that he wanted to go to AC Milan immediately. You know, that I wonder whether there's an element of annoyance and antagonism toward him, and they were quite pleased when this happened.
Yeah.
To the actual incident itself, though, or the incidents itself, it's also worth bearing in mind that he did a pretty good job on Cesc Fabregas as well.
Yes, he did, game, yeah.
It hasn't actually been spoken about that much. I mean, I don't think anybody's really come out of that with that much glory. Van Persie's initial challenge could have been a red card in another day.
The stamping was very clumsy,
Stamping was a... Yes, indeed, clumsy is the word, Chris. It was clumsy rather than malicious.
Yeah.
Which you can't say about Adebayor.
No.
And as for the charge down the pitch and the sort of, you know, dad at a wedding sort of, like, you know, slide, it's a bit, you know, it's not a spur-of-the-moment thing when you do something like that.
No.
I think he'd lathered himself up and he'd managed to convince himself that the Arsenal fans haven't moved on from him, that they hate him, and that they're gonna, you know, and he's gonna show them good. Whereas I detect that a lot of Arsenal fans have probably moved on, and it was only the knuckle-headed ones with no social skills who actually reacted to it. Whereas a lot
the
of
ones
them,
who bring garden,
a lot of them, yeah, they're like, I mean, I'm not quite sure how they let garden furniture in. I mean, you know, they're pretely certain that there's a rule against that. I'm assuming that that belongs to a photographer. But, I mean, the upshot of it is that there was a steward who, you know, perhaps not badly injured, but certainly got himself a bit of a bruising there. Mm. And, I mean, really, you know, fans are entitled to dish out some licks to ex-players. It is part of the game. But there have to be degrees of, you know, I don't know whether or not maybe the Arsenal fans went too far, but I suspect that this is just about Adebayor, you know, convincing himself that Arsenal were against him, the fans were against him, and he was going to show them. And I'm concerned that there's a degree of premeditation.
Yes.
Meditation in the whole thing. And I think either way, nobody came out of it looking particularly good.
Quite. No. Not being an Arsenal supporter, I don't know about all this stuff about him being, I don't know, lazy or temperamental or a disruptive influence on the team and all of that. I'm sure there may be some truth in it, and Graham, I'm sure, is probably better qualified to answer that than myself. But the impression I get is that it's just the really strong-minded section of the Arsenal followers that have just kind of, to some degree, polluted the minds of others. I mean, that's kind of to be expected to some extent, but they've kind of now decided, yes, okay, right, well, he will be like, you know, our natural enemy, and as you say, Terry, Adebayor's kind of picked up on this, and he sort of thought, well, you know, actually, I'm not that sort of, you know, I'm not that bad, so I'll go and show you. And of course, it was the wrong thing to do, but in some ways, I can kind of go along with. I can understand why he would want to do it. Let's put it that way. What I was surprised about watching Match of the Day on Saturday night was that the panel, the pundits that were on, they were all totally satisfied with the fact that Adebayor came out after the game to sort of say, "Oh, sorry about that. I got caught up in the moment." Yeah. And they sort of went, "Oh, that's all right then." And I just thought, "Well, actually, that doesn't make it all right." To my mind,
I don't think it was a terribly convincing apology. What do you think, Graham?
I just wonder what would have happened if whatever object that hit the steward's head had hit Adebayor's head instead. I wonder how this whole this is another thing about how this incident would have changed.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair to say that the whole thing had the potential to escalate.
Yeah.
quite drastically, and form up a really major incident. I mean, if the stewards, you could also say if the stewards hadn't been on the ball,
oh, no,
there could
yeah.
have been a pitch
yeah, exactly. I mean, and the thing was, is like, even if, you know, there was this unfortunate incident, but they're the ones who have to deal with this sort of thing. And you know, when you know, and their job standing in front of a waste ball isn't going to be easy anyway. But to be
sure.
for someone to do that, to, and they would have seen him running from all the way to the other end. They would have known what he was going to do from 10 seconds earlier.
Mm. Well, that's point. I mean, it's not, if he got caught up in the emotion.
Yeah,
I think
it's not just like turning around and flicking the V's up at you. This is someone running from the other end of the pitch, saying, "Look,
exactly.
I'm going to come and give you what for."
Yeah, I mean, I haven't got a problem with an ex-player, and it's happened to me. I remember Andy Gray sticking his fingers up at supporters, and we gave him an untold stick. And right, he stuck his fingers up at us. Frankly, we deserved it. The outrage from other Palace fans was absurd, frankly.
Oh, yeah.
That they felt the jet. I just laughed because I thought, well, I mean, it's just, that's the way it goes. I mean, these are acceptable parameters. I mean, it's.
Yeah, but Andy Gray didn't run 100 yards to just specifically flick the bees up at a certain area of the crowd.
He was taking a corner at the time in front of the away end, and he took advantage of the situation.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely fair enough. I mean, the Palace fans have taken into question his parentage, his sexual activities, orientation, and his personal hygiene.
Yeah.
You know, and so he just returned them with a quick V sign. It is not the same as running up the pitch. Yeah, there's got to be, I think that you have to accept, let's say, common sense. There's got to be some parameters here. Just don't get, you know, carried away.
Mm.
If you want to give some back to the sort of get back to away fans, by all means do. But, you know, let's try not to get anybody hurt.
Yeah.
Or instigate a riot.
I mean, I think another thing is that people say, well, you know, the Arsenal fans were completely out of order, and yes, they were. I'm not going to try and defend them in any way. But the thing is, if the guy is found who threw that who threw that object, then he's likely to be banned for pretty much ever from all grounds. Adebayor's going to be playing again, probably. I don't know, his ban hasn't come through yet, but I've no doubt he's going to get one, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's as high as someone like David Pruttons or De Canio's, because of the elevation this whole event has taken now.
Yeah, well, they can use the stamping as well too. I mean, I'm with you, Grant. I think that probably, I suspect what's happened here is that they will use the stamping as extra leverage to punish him further. Whereas perhaps without the celebration, he might have got away with maybe a one-match ban or conceivably nothing at all.
Yeah.
Because unless the referee's report comes back saying that, oh, I missed that and I should have awarded a red card, the FA can't do anything because they don't follow UEFA's guidelines, they follow FIFA's guidelines.
Yeah, well, Clattenburg certainly laid into him after the whole goal celebration incident, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, and quite rightly so. I mean, you must have. I mean, it was just oafish. It's absolutely oafish.
I think it said some. It was summed up after the game by someone who said it was. It showed a complete lack of class.
Well, that was Van Persie, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought his statement was telling. I thought it was perfectly to the point. I wonder if he actually wrote it. Actually,
I doubt it.
I think it was the Arsenal PR people who wrote it. But.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I'm sure that he agrees with the sentiments. Anyway, so shall we crack on to the next subject?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say there's a final footnote on that. It was just the timing thing, given that we had all the incident with West Ham Millwall hooligans a couple of weeks ago. That, you know, and we're looking at a possible bid here for the 2018 World Cup.
Precisely.
You just sense that there's perhaps a bit of a momentum starting to build up, and we could probably well do without it. So I dare say that would have been the last thing on his mind, however, when he was running the
48 yards. No, it did hide 14 arrests at the Birmingham Derby as well. So.
Yeah, no, which we haven't talked about at all, apart from now, and we haven't got much time to dwell on it. But yeah, no, not a great trend, possibility of a trend taking place, certainly in the media, which we could well do without.
Yeah,
indeed. Well, let's turn our attention to more positive things then, and there's a big week of European matches coming up this week, Champions League and Europa League. Just some fantastic ties coming up that are going to be on TV, certainly here in the UK. Juventus against Bordeaux, Marseille against Milan, Chelsea against Porto, Lyon against Fiorentina, and Inter versus Barca, to name but five. That last one is a particularly big match, it has to be said.
Which is being shown on Red Button. For anyone who doesn't
a lot of those
have
on the old Red
Sky.
Button, yep.
Yeah, for those that don't have Sky, have got Virgin, like me, I can't watch that game. I have to watch Rangers Stuttgart instead. Joy of joys. Anyway, carry on.
Stuttgart and Rangers, yes.
Yes.
We should have mentioned that one, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
How did
that one slip through? Great. Scottish football. Joy.
What's quite interesting, actually, is the fact that in the Champions League, this group stage of the Champions League, is that I think there's eight new teams that are sort of arriving on the block, and even familiar names like AZ Alkmaar, who haven't been in the Champions League group stage before, so it's certainly interesting. Going to be interesting seeing how they get on. But Inter versus Barca, obviously the big story there is, of course, Ibrahimovic and Samuel Eto'o sort of having switched sides. I was going to mention as well the fact that a lot of the matches this week involve teams that are actually really well matched in terms of how well they're playing at the moment, and that being a case in point in terms of Inter against Barcelona. Any thoughts on that one beforehand? Graham, you're our Italian football expert. Do you fancy Inter to win that one?
I'm not so sure. I mean, I think, like, Inter, all right, they won at the weekend, but they didn't really convince. I watched most of that game, and it was a couple of like goals from about 20 minutes of it that managed to wear down the opposition, and it wasn't convincing by any stretch. Not as convincing, obviously, as the match before when they played Milan, but you know when they strolled through that game. But as we mentioned last week, that was more down to Leonardo's management than. Than the way that Inter were playing, so I haven't seen Barcelona yet this season, so I can't really mention. I can't really say. I should think that the Inter will do well enough at home. I think it'll be quite tight, and I'm sure you're going to see Eto and Ibrahimovic really turning it on. Whether or not that will actually work for either of them is another thing entirely. But no, I think certainly a mouth-watering prospect. But I'll be watching Standard Liège versus Arsenal.
Of course you will. Of course you will. We would expect nothing less. Inter actually very good at good form in the Champions League against Spanish teams. As a matter of fact, lost hardly ever at all actually against Spanish teams. Any thoughts on that one? Very briefly, Terry.
Very briefly, I think it could be a cagey draw. Although it is an enticing matchup, I think that the return fixture later on in the group will be more interesting, because I think it's still early doors in the Champions League group stage, so it could be a cagey draw.
Yeah, I
think that would seem quite likely.
There is also a replay of the 1993 final, isn't there, this week?
Yes, Marseille v Milan, yes. And of course, two new coaches in charge there. We've mentioned Leonardo, and of course, Didier Deschamps, who's now back in charge of Marseille. And I think Marseille are up to fourth in the table, at least they were the last time I looked in Ligue 1. Although they've started off quite well, I don't think Deschamps is quite convinced everyone thus far. But it's still obviously very early days yet, so that'll be an excellent match too. As you say, a rerun of the old 93 final.
I think the very controversial final, wasn't it?
Very controversial final. I think the first time that a French club had won the European Cup as well. Just throw an extra piece of trivia.
Yeah, it wasn't actually stripped from them, was it? But they weren't allowed to defend it, were they?
That's right. Yes.
Because obviously there were shenanigans in the semi-final where they'd got their league opposition to basically, well, they paid them to chuck the game so that they could win the title and field a full strength team to get them through the semis and getting to the final.
Indeed, they paid big for that, but yeah, they were allowed to keep their Champions League victory.
Mm.
Bernard Tapie, what a man. So, much to look forward to there during the course of the coming week. I'm sure we'll be reporting on that in next week's Sound of Football podcast. But for the time being, just a note to draw it all together, just to talk about the wonderful success of our Socrates London Football Bloggers meetup. And Terry, congratulations for doing such a sterling job on that.
Yes,
and
congratulations,
sure, many of you. Cheers. Congratulations. I'm sure there are probably many of you listening in who either won't know what we're talking about or weren't there on the night, but I can assure you that it was a fantastic night, and there will be another one of these events going on in December, am I right, Terry?
9th of December.
Okay, and so basically an early appeal, if you missed on this occasion and you are a football blogger in or around the London area, go to the Socrates website. It's Socrates... Oh, I've forgotten what it is now, Terry.
Socrates Meetup at blogspot.com.
That's it. Go along to there, and all the details are on there, and you can find out. It was a great night. Got to meet lots of fantastic people who are writing and producing football blog sites. So if any of you are listening in, thanks for turning up. It was great to see you all, and hopefully you'll be all along again next time around in December when there'll be another match going on in the background. This time it will be, is it Arsenal Fiorentina? Is that right?
Arsenal Olympiacos.
Olympiacos, was it?
That's right, yeah.
Beg your pardon. Must do my research. Mental note for next time. So there we go. So a fantastic night, and I say well done once again, Terry, for sorting all of that out.
All right.
And we look forward to the next one.
Cool.
And it just leaves us to say that's it for this particular episode of... I nearly said some people on the pitch then. Oh, there's a Freudian slip. Sound of Football. We are on iTunes if you want to download this particular podcast or indeed any of our other podcasts. We're on iTunes. Just follow your nose and find all the links there. And similarly, you can catch us on Twitter or just visit Some People on the Pitch or The Onion Bag. All the details you need are there, and do feel free to leave us a comment on the Sound of Football blog site about this or any of our podcasts. I reckon that's a good point at which to leave things. So, Terry and Graham, unless you have any further things to say, I think we'll leave it at that, shall we?
Yep, sounds good to me.
Yep,
good. We'll see you all again next time around for another Some People. I've just done it again. Sound of Football.
Say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.